Welcome to the Wonder What podcast. My name is Rob.
I'm Robbie.
And what are we doing here, Robbie? Why did you drag me out here again to the kitchen table?
Well, it's that time.
To use my brain. When I want my brain to shut down for the day.
I know. I'm just asking for another 45 minutes or so.
Okay.
One of the many people pulling at you.
That's okay. That's all part of it. That's good. That's
a
good thing.
I'm trying to retain a monthly schedule around the first week of every month.
If you don't know my wife, she likes everything neatly cataloged and in its category and done in a timely fashion. So
I like to think God likes
that
too.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure I'm one of the sinners who would just like to not have to be on a schedule for a moment. But it's all right. It's good.
I've been telling you about this for almost a week, so I thought maybe.
But I've only been listening for maybe an hour.
That does make a difference. So, but thank you. I appreciate you coming out because you do all the hard work.
I use everything
that requires a brain and all the
not
editing,
true.
Which takes quite
my
some time.
My wife is brilliant. My wife is a brilliant woman, and I'm very proud of her brain.
That's nice of you to say. Very nice of you.
So what's up? What are we talking about today?
Well, I always like to cover at the beginning, in case we lose people after 5 minutes.
But that's a given.
Yes.
The three that are listening
that's right.
are already falling asleep.
But I like to cover any upcoming events for Eastgate, and we have quite a few things. We have Chili Palooza.
Woohoo!
That's super fun. That's going to be February 28th at 6:30. That's a Wednesday.
And you know, Blake and I had a big discussion about this because he wants to bring gumbo to Chili Palooza, which I keep saying is not chili. And I told him to give me proof. And so what did he do? He's renaming it. He's calling it Mexican gumbo or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was going to say, I feel like it came up at several staff meetings, and I think a lot of us were like, really? Is this what we want to spend our time talking about at staff meetings? Is if gumbo
well, it
is
was kind of
chili?
An important moment for me. For being a person who likes the rules, I'm surprised you weren't in on
care
that
about
with
that.
Me.
Okay. I just bring it.
Either way, it's a lot of fun. We go, we hang out on a Wednesday night. Everybody... We'll either bring a chili dish or, bring their appetite. But mostly we want you to bring a chili dish. We do a judging of that. One of the few times you're going to get judged at Eastgate is based on your chili.
And we try not to judge you, just the chili.
Just the chili.
In fact, we do hide the names, honestly, on there. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Janelle makes the cards if people sign up ahead of time and just writes the kind of chili it is, and then their name is on the back. I mean, you can look at it, look at it.
So you can find it. So it's not all anonymous. Because how do we know? I was going to say, how would we know who to give the gift to?
I mean, there's a number that's associated with their name.
I see,
and,
okay.
And I think their name is back there, too. But I think that's just so we can just look at everything with an open mind. And are there two kinds of chili or no?
That's I forget.
There used to be a contest for the spiciest.
Yeah, and then basically that just kind of turned into a pain.
Only so many people were willing to test that chili.
So
certain ones.
Because it's very much like the night of pies, mm-hmm. where you have the savory and the sweet, and this one is. I think it's best tasting spicy, best tasting all around, and then best tasting spiciest.
Oh, okay.
Or something along those lines. So, but anyway, we got the same prizes. Not the same prizes. I mean, it's not like we take the prizes back from the people last year
and
hand them
recycle
out again.
Them.
But we've
you
got
hold it for 5
similar
minutes.
Type prizes. It's fun stuff. Everybody
first
has
and
a
second
good time.
Place and,
then we also have fire pits out in the courtyard.
So you can eat outside if you want to. And I think all the information's on our website, eastgatefellowship.net. And I think there's a sign up on there too. But it's always super fun. And
it is.
Even if you can't make the chili, you can show up with an appetite because there's always a ton of it.
If you can't make the chili, you can eat the chili.
You can, yeah.
Everybody can eat the chili.
And my favorite is always...
What?
Cincinnati
chili. Cincinnati chili, yeah.
It's my favorite kind of chili.
Not many people down here know about Cincinnati
chili. I know, and
chili.
I made it once, and I think it did all right, but eventually it was kind of like staff can't make stuff. I mean, we couldn't be in the contest, which is fine. That's fine.
Oh.
But I sort of lost my motivation. I'm not competitive at all, by the way. No, something you may not have known about slightly. Me. Like, why should I bring it if I can't win anything? Oh, that's really terrible. I did, but Cincinnati chili, if you've never had it, you can look it up online. We had it in Indiana, and you'd already known about it. I'd never heard of it.
Yeah, I'm from Ohio, and that's where it's from, hence the name.
Yeah, so there's no beans in it. There's a lot of very finely ground meat and tomato sauce and cinnamon.
Yeah.
And just an interesting group of seasonings in there. And you usually have it over spaghetti with cheese on the top, and you can have onion or you can have
it on
a hot dog.
It is so good.
But I think some people were a little afraid of it. You know, I tried to have the spaghetti and cheese there and stuff too, and it was like, it's just very different.
It is. Mm. I suppose it's an acquired taste, though I still say the moment you taste it, you immediately realize this is divine.
It's not sweet, even though there's cinnamon in it. There's not sugar in it, but it just has an interesting
I guess the origins of it are Greek. And there's a lot of that same kind of spice in Greek cuisine.
That's true.
So that's coming up.
Yeah, so that's really fun. The kids, I say the kids, I generally am referring to Matt, Janelle, Blake, usually have one kind of event every month. In the summertime, it's Surf and Grill. So in the winter months, we have either Milk and Cookies or Night of Pies, and this month is the Chili Palooza. So it's just a time for us to get together, and it's really fun.
Hang out together. Mm-hmm.
But there's also all the regular small groups that are happening every month are still going on.
Like?
Well, one of my favorites lately has been the Popcorn Parables.
Oh, that is fun.
Uh-huh. That's coming up February 21st, and Matt's going to show, that's going to be a Wednesday also. He's been doing it on Friday, but he's trying to do every special meeting now on a Wednesday to see how that works with people's schedule. And this month, they're going to show the movie Cinderella. And it's really fun. We go to the gig room, and there's comfortable places to sit, popcorn. And
the gig room has the best video setup of, I don't know how those kids merited that, but they've got an awesome screen and a blazing sound system over there. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really
nice. If you like movies, you should come hang out. Matt always gives a little background, like you see him. Yeah, like, well, not even so much. I guess it's trivia, but
some of it is. Yeah.
It reminds me of on TMC, Turner Classic Movies, how they'll introduce the film, kind of give you some insights about how it was made and what went into it. And then afterwards, it's just such an edifying discussion about how it is that we can recognize the story of Christ or the implications of Christ or what it is to follow him based on the story that's present there. So
yeah, and if you don't know Matt Green, who's our worship leader, he and his friend Cole Schneider have the movie review article in, I think, every Friday's paper at the News Herald. And then also he and Cole got a job. This is their second year now. They're teaching
film studies at Gulf Coast.
Yeah, there's a word for it. Continuing education or something like that. On Fridays, and they each take every other Friday, and so anyway, that's a big passion of his, and so this was kind of a natural outcome for what he loves
but
to do.
I'll tell you, I've yet to go to one of those and not walk away edified.
Yes.
Like, it's really a good conversation really that comes up. And I like it knowing that we're going to discuss that, because it makes me engage the movie differently than I would if I were just going to sit and mindlessly watch something.
And there's also childcare provided.
Yeah.
So it can be a date night for people with kids, and they're over in the big room. Well, not the big room, but the action room, and they have a movie to watch and stuff. And so it's really fun for them too. But there's also the men's and women's breakfast, and the women's Bible study on Sunday nights too. Those are still going on regularly, and all that's on our website too.
Very cool.
Volunteer group I wanted to mention this month, and you don't have any idea who it is unless you just read my notes.
I did not.
Okay. Well, I've been thinking about them a lot because there was a church shooting a month or two ago.
In Texas,
yeah. And it was very horrifying and very scary. But we've always had Lance Livingston run our security, and I just wanted to mention him because he's such a great guy.
He really is.
He puts his heart and soul into that, and ever since he's come to Eastgate, he made a job for himself, which was all volunteer, but as security, and he's always had a team of men and women that help him keep the church safe. And it's escalated even more since this last shooting of different ways to keep us safe. And the kids especially. And if any of you know Lance, he's like this teddy bear. And yet he's a retired cop from Long Beach. And I wouldn't mess with him if it were. But he's a very sweet guy, and his concern is not only for the whole congregation, but the kids especially. And so he's done some advanced training recently. He's got a few more guys and gals helping him. We have some new things that we've implemented in our building to try to keep the building safe.
And I was really impressed. He put the word out there, but even before he got the word out, and this was after the shooting, obviously, but so many people have already come forward and contacted Lance to volunteer their time to make sure that we're safe during our meeting times. And it's an unfortunate byproduct of the day and age that we're living in, but he's really risen to the challenge of that. Lance is such a great guy.
He really is.
We've known him for 22 years.
Yeah, he's been around just...
He and Liz were some of the first members at our fellowship.
Mm-hmm. And his wife, Liz, is the office manager there at Eastgate. But I remember one time he told me years ago, he says, when I retire, I want to come work at Eastgate. Not for pay or anything. I just want to be there to do more. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you do so much already.
And we decided we're not waiting until you retire. We're putting you to work right now.
Now, yeah, for no pay now. But not just Lance, but his team of people that help him. I don't have all their names here in front of me, but you'll see them. They're labeled. They wear name tags and say they're in security. And no one has complained.
That sounded weird the way you said that. They say they're insecurity?
They say they are part of the security team.
I'm the insecurity team.
That's you. You're the president.
But yes, and you'll see them near the doors. We've started a policy where once the teaching portion of the service is started, we lock the doors. Mm-hmm. And they'll stand near there. They'll go out and patrol around in the courtyard. Mm-hmm. And you know, I say patrol around. It's not a matter of them marching back and forth or anything like
just
that.
Just walk around.
But just keeping their eyes open and praying and just trusting God to keep us all safe.
Absolutely. Which actually reminds me of the old days of Javaluya. Lance used to do that.
He did.
Way back then.
Way back when.
Full of a lot of craziness and wild kids in the parking lot and everything.
Yeah. He would take care of the outside in the parking lot. I would go in there and try to manage the mosh pits that were going on. And that was...
Yeah, it got a little crazy.
I was too old back then to be doing that. I couldn't even imagine doing it now. But they were fun days back at Javaluya.
Yes, they were. He's been faithful and around for a long time.
He's a good man. So if you ever see Lance around there or any of the security team, just tell him thank you.
We don't want to take it for granted.
You sit around sometimes and wonder, you know, man, Eastgate's awesome. And if you think that, the reason Eastgate is awesome is because of Lance Livingston and all of the various
people
that are volunteering and being part of this community.
There are probably any given Sunday, probably, if you count the kids' teachers, 30 volunteers or more. I mean, there's a lot, and everybody contributes so much. But I also wanted to mention, too, which has nothing to do with anything except that I just want people to feel better about the building. The roof, I think, is all done now. We have a new roof.
It's pretty wonderful.
We've had two good rains and haven't gotten any drips.
Not a drip. Not a drop.
It's been really nice.
And it seems like such a doofusy thing to be excited about. But for us...
It's a pretty big thing to be embarrassed about and also just hated. I mean, it was one of the worst leaks is right in the media room where I am.
Yep.
And we had to...
It was literally like a waterfall coming right down on our computers and everything. It was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember two Christmases ago, or it might have been three. Three Christmases ago, it was raining so severely, and the roof was leaking so badly over there right near the... it wasn't bad, too far from the snow machine. And Janelle and I went in there and tried to hang up tarps, like blue tarps, to maybe catch it so that everybody could be safe. It was so horrible.
That's right.
And happily, they got up there. I was really tempted to cancel the Christmas Eve service, but then that morning, Christmas Eve morning, all of a sudden we heard a group of guys, Don Nations, had gotten a roofing company to go out on that day and get it patched up, at least temporarily for us, so that it wouldn't leak on us during that service. And that was very nice of them.
Really nice.
Boy, it's really wonderful now to hear the rain outside. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. and not to be worried that it's going to be inside yes. somewhere.
So. Yeah, we have a little tarp system set up in the media room, kind of a tarp on a string that we'd pull over the computers that they would hit, and we haven't even used it lately. And we used to have to open it every time we'd come meet, and then when we'd leave, you never knew if it was going to rain or not, so we'd cover it, and we just left it open, and it's been kind of like...
So you know how there are churches that are really, really cool and they've got really awesome buildings and cool things and programs and
I think that's everybody buildings. Besides
I think that's everybody. I was just going to say, but if you thought that that was Eastgate, no, but we do have a roof that keeps the water out. And I think that's pretty cool.
You learn to appreciate those things.
Yes, certainly do.
You had a leaky roof. And also, actually, during that time when it was getting really bad, we did look around. We looked at what it would look like to yeah. buy. We looked at what it would be to rent somewhere else. And I know personally for me, working with the money and everything, I'm like, we got a pretty good deal
we
here.
We got a really good deal.
We have a great price per square footage, yeah. and buying is not an option for us. And so
we don't want to ever have to change that dynamic of the way things are in terms
we don't
of minimizing
put people
the
under that
aspect.
Pressure
That's
of
right.
trying to pay for a building. I suppose if someone just gave us a bunch of money that we could just out and out maybe buy one or have one built or something, that'd be different. But we just never wanted to put people under that kind of pressure. So
I suppose if the whole church came together and said, please put us under pressure about money, that would be
we
one
would
thing.
We would really like to have the weight of a mortgage on our shoulders.
But
You're
until
welcome.
That, but until that time comes, I think we're fine. I think we got a good workable model.
And now the roof doesn't leak, so that's super good.
Woohoo!
So I want to jump to any sports news.
Oh, boy. There's a ton of sports news.
There is. So you talk about what you were thinking of, because
well,
I don't know what you were thinking
I don't know. I'm trying to look at your face, and I'm thinking you're probably going to talk about the Super Bowl.
That's one thing.
Okay. But I was going to talk about the Colts.
That's good. Let's talk about the Colts.
Colts lost their coach.
Yes.
The New England Patriots had an offensive coordinator who was supposed to... sign on, had made all the agreements to sign on and
verbal,
become the head.
Yeah,
yeah verbal agreements. Had the assistant coaches quitting other jobs to come over to work for him. And then at the last, the 11th hour, the last moment, he bailed out. And so.
It's pretty low, mister.
That's rough. Even Tony Dungy had some scathing things to say. And he's not the kind of guy that does that kind of stuff.
He really
so.
Doesn't.
Ultimately, I think it's better off for the Colts because you don't want somebody who doesn't want to be there. So. You know, I wish him well, but I'm curious as to see what's going to happen with the Colts now with that coaching
situation. As of today, I don't believe they have found anybody
I don't
else.
Believe so. They've had some interviews. They had another interview today with the Eagles offensive coordinator. And
oh,
the
really?
Eagles won the Super Bowl, so maybe that's a good thing. Maybe
and
that's
there was much rejoicing. Sorry out there if you're a Patriots fan, but
yeah.
the Patriots have brought down so many teams that they've kind of made a lot of enemies, including
yeah.
the Woodrums, who they have knocked down the Colts more than once.
And we will acknowledge it. They are an amazing team. Bill Belichick is a ridiculously good coach. Tom Brady is clearly one of the greatest of all times when it comes to quarterbacking at 40 years old. Come on. But it doesn't make it any easier to have them out there doing that. Dynasties are always – everybody's always going to – who's not part of the dynasty is always going to be resentful of the dynasty.
That's me.
That's me.
Part
That's
of,
always me.
Not
That's,
part of the dynasty.
I've never been part of the dynasty ever anyway.
Well, I remember when the Colts were doing really well. And Matt Green, who's a big Jags
That's
fan,
true.
He's like, well, how many wins do you have to have? Like, just a little bit more. So, I mean, I get that.
But I would never call us a dynasty because we only got to the Super Bowl twice and only won it once.
True, true. So, but we had a few good years there
we
with
did have
Peyton,
a few good
and
years.
Those were glorious. And
those days are over.
But we did enjoy the Super Bowl. excuse me. I'd pretty much had myself convinced that the
yeah.
Patriots were just going to win it. And when those last few seconds ticked off the clock, you and I were in the kitchen. I just remember staring at the screen and seeing 0-0 on there and thinking, wait, when does the flag come out that gets that lets
You're
the
right.
Patriots make one more play to win the game? And it didn't happen. And I just was surprised beyond all measure. And Nick Foles is such a great guy. I was really glad to see him be able to, as a quarterback
yeah.
of the Eagles, pull off that win.
And he seems
really
like a
nice.
Really good person.
He does,
you
know? Yeah.
He's a fellow believer and he...
Mm-hmm.
Definitely is outspoken
Seminary
about that. Yeah,
student.
So it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that was good.
Obviously, God was on our side, is what I'm trying to say.
That is so easy to say now on the side of a win. No, the other thing I was going to talk about was what has transpired with our son, Bradley.
Who? I don't know who you're talking about.
That soon?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Our son Bradley got a job.
Your voice is just getting lower.
With the Miami Marlins.
This probably happened a week after we recorded the last podcast, and we've been crying baseball tears for about a month now. Yeah.
Because it means that, I mean, listen, we're extremely excited for him. And I mean,
very proud of him.
Very proud. Working for an organization like this, he's one of the statistical analysts. So if you've ever seen the movie Moneyball, he is the Jonah Hill character. In that scenario. So
he's the baseball analyst.
Yeah, then. He's doing all the analytical stuff on the stats. But, you know, it's just hard. He's been a part of our lives. And our grandson, who was born here in this town and has been a vital part of our lives, we've been an integral part of his care system
since
the time
him.
He was born. I know.
And took him with
we
them.
Used to say to him, if you're going to move, that's fine, but you're going to miss your son.
Yeah.
But we never followed through with it. We chickened out at the last minute. And so now he's far, far away, but we Skype with him. And
we do. And that is
tomorrow night, we're going to read him his bedtime story via Skype. That should make you feel pretty sad for us right
we're
now.
We're pretty sad. We could use your prayers.
Yeah, actually, we should have no business to talk. It's so wrong because we know that there are so many people who have not even had that experience. And so we're grateful for the time we've had.
And we have our first trip scheduled to go see them.
Of course.
Next month.
We're going to be on the road a lot now. Yeah. Just because we've got...
Yeah, he's down in Jupiter, Florida.
Part of our heart is down in Jupiter.
It really is. A little piece of it went down there. And for a period of time, and I will say it didn't last more than a couple of weeks, but for a while there, I'm like, I hate baseball, and I hate the fact that I passed any love of baseball to my son. This is wrong. I hate it. But honestly, he'd been looking for a job for about a year. He had a new job a year ago, a really good one at the Air Force Base, but almost from the time he got it, they said, by the way, this job will probably move you to San Antonio, and or it will come to an end. And so he has been looking and applying for a year. So when he got this job offer, he was, of course, very happy. But also he thought we'd be happy.
And for some strange reason, we just sat there staring at him, staring daggers at him.
And because it was still in Florida, because he did apply all over the United States. And the fact that he got a decently paying job.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these are almost like internships. People will work for Major League Ball team for practically free just to be able to be there.
Yeah.
So we are glad he's in Florida. It's about an 8-hour drive. So
at that point, that's the only thing we know about baseball right now. And the thing is Bradley, who's been a lifelong Cubs fan, has now got to hide his Cubs Nation identity and pretend like he's a Marlins fan, even though he's talking like he's a Marlins fan.
But I'm sure he is. He said that's his goal, is to see the Marlins make it to the Not the Super Bowl.
If he did that, then he was definitely a bad hire.
But he's working at Roger Dean Stadium, which is the minor league field where the Marlins have spring practice.
He sent us a text from his office. It overlooks the outfield.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool.
Gotta
say, that's a pretty good gig.
I'm sure no one sympathizes with us right now. Everyone we've talked to said, well, that's a dream job.
Yeah, I know it. Yeah, Everybody looks at us like we're crazy. And we're like, no, you don't understand. But so, it's all right.
We're happy for him. And
we are. We're very happy for him. Come home, Bradley.
Please. Okay. And so I wanted to mention that first and then follow up with what we have been watching on TV lately, which has sort of has been somewhat therapeutic maybe since they've moved away. And that is, we're a little behind the curve on it, but we just started the series This Is Us.
Yeah. Oy, that's a crying show. That's one of those shows you sit there and cry. The thing about that show, and the thing that really I think gets me, is that it's our time period. Like the flashback part, if you're not familiar with it, I can't really give... If you've never seen it and you're going to go watch it, I really can't even talk about it too much because
there's a twist
in the whole thing. But part of it takes place back in the 80s. Uh-huh. And when you and I were starting our family, and I'm so amazed that the Mandy Moore character looks like you. Her hairstyle was just like yours was back in those days, and the clothes she wears, apart from the jean jumpers.
she was wearing jean jumpers at that time.
But because we were in the crazy shirts, that's all. But anyway, it's been interesting. It's been nostalgic. It's definitely been a crying show.
But it's not. And I know some people have avoided it because I don't want to just cry. But it's also been an incredibly feel good.
It is. Movie. It's they uplifting.
They prioritize family and, so mm-hmm. much, and they don't hide from the flaws problems and the sadness, but also kind of come back together and express their love one for another.
I feel like it is a very uplifting show. You know, there's a show that we've been watching that is canceled now. Did you know that? Did you hear that?
What show?
Kevin Probably Saves the World
is
canceled. And that's a sad thing because that was a show that actually had a spiritual emphasis and an interesting take on a spiritual emphasis that was another feel good kind of.
Yeah,
I thought it was a really good show, but I guess it's one of those things. You know, my theory is they can't keep putting out good shows because we'll catch on at some point. They'll be like, wait a minute, couldn't all of these be like that? So, you know, you got to have room for The Apprentice or something.
Lord.
Anyway.
Kardashians. Sorry. We're showing our age now.
Yeah. Anything else going on, Robbie, that we want to talk about tonight?
Well, just one thing. I'll try not to take a lot of time on this, but I just had listened to the podcast last time. I didn't like the way I had worded something about, I think sometimes we have a tendency to, when we see something about the Bible in a movie, that we think that's legitimately in the Bible. We believe that they've done their research. We believe that they've, you know, really, oh, I saw it in a movie, so I know that this is how it happened. I guess what I was trying to say is that if you see something in a movie that tries to reflect something in the Bible, don't just necessarily take it at face value, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I just didn't like the way I worded it before. I'm not sure I've done much of a better job now. But for instance, you and I were watching a movie the other day, and one of the main characters said, well, as it says in Ezekiel 36, verse 5, and he started going on and on. And I'm like, wait, is that in there? And you knew right away, well, it's sort of, but it's not exactly. So I opened up my Bible app and started looking at it. And part of it was in there, like he said, but then he kind of went on.
And made up a whole.
Made up stuff. And they're kind of tricky like that, because you feel like if they're quoting a chapter and verse, then it's real. And movies will take all sorts of.
Liberties,
yeah. I don't know if I was going to say royalties, but liberties to with the Bible and with Christianity and with what's represented as Christianity. And then I just think we have to be really careful not to like build our theology on something we've seen in the movies. It's kind of a pet peeve of mine, and it's maybe because I'm OCD or whatever. But we've watched a few Bible movies over the years, and I always sit out there with my Bible. As soon as they start saying something or doing something, you know, I'll like, wait, did it really happen like this? And because they're not always accurate in that.
No,
and
they're just very rarely accurate. But this,
they change
this
things
is still something
effect.
That I get in trouble. And you're trying to ease this and make it sound like, you know, I wasn't trying to scold people or whatever.
Yeah.
But see, I make it worse because I'm so down on most of these things.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a movie that was released in the theaters not that long ago, and somebody was just so excited about it for me to see it. And then when I finally saw it, I was just like, this is horrible. This is to me, I would rather not see the movie made at all or ever have to see the movie than to have them monkey around with the story. Because when they're monkeying with the story, they're actually detracting. There's a reason
they
why are. There's an order to. There's a reason why he says something at this point and not at that point.
Yeah.
And nobody has any respect for that, and they just jumble it around.
Yeah.
Okay, you got me on a roll. So why? Why did you do this to me?
No, I didn't mean to get you all riled up about it. But I guess it's just kind of a word of warning, and again, wanting to soften what I said last time. I didn't mean to come across.
I think it came out harsher.
Oh, great. I didn't mean that
I listened to the podcast. I didn't catch that as being scolding at all. I didn't take it that way, but maybe. But if you felt that way, then it's important for you to be able to express what it is.
Well, I kind of felt like maybe I was saying don't watch movies too or something. I don't know. It didn't sound right to me. I can't remember exactly what it was that bothered me. But I mean, you the other day read the book True Grit.
Yes.
And then this is a really Homer Simpson thing to do again. And then right after that, you watched the movie. And it was on your day off, and you couldn't quite get enough of True Grit. But that's
the
beside
the Coen Brothers remake of it, which was actually pretty good and fairly faithful to the original novel.
So it doesn't take much to get you started on it.
Well, it's a good book. It's an interesting story, a well-done movie.
It is, but
it's an unusual movie in that this guy wrote this back in 1968, And he's, you know, a middle-aged man, but he wrote it in the voice of a teenage girl going off on this adventure. I thought it was fascinating. Anyway,
no, but sorry. My point was, is as when the movie was on, every little bit you'd bring up a point. Oh, it was different than this in the book. Oh, no, it was just like this in the book. And it's kind of like what we're talking about.
Yes, except there's a huge difference in this. That in a novel like that, that is basically just a narrative that's telling a story that's interesting and fairly entertaining, I can put up with it. I don't mind them monkeying around with the storyline at that point because there could be some dramatic effect that's necessary to enhance that on a visual level. But when you get into the Gospels, when you get into the Bible and the narrative that the Bible's telling, there's a lot more at stake. We're talking about something that God is communicating to us through, and there's specific reasons why things are lined up the way they are. There's things presented the way they are, or couched in the environment that they're couched in, that actually help us to even understand the meaning of that. If we all of a sudden start taking some of Jesus' words or instructions that he was giving on the Sermon on the Mount and have him saying it on the cross, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't actually carry with it the idea that was originally trying to be conveyed at the moment. Mm-hmm.
That's true. And
Or another example.
That's fine.
Is that if you start all of a sudden have Jesus saying some of the things that he said to, like, maybe the woman at the well, but have him saying them to the Pharisees, you've all of a sudden
changed the context.
You've changed the context. You've mixed the whole thing up. And not that they do it that drastically, but they do it enough that it's distressing to me. It distresses me because I guess for me, I don't feel like having an entertaining or dramatic show is ever going to be reason enough to monkey around with something like this that actually carries with it, that can carry with it, the weight of our worldview, the weight of our self-understanding and our understanding even of God.
Well, it's bothered me many times, and I'm thinking, I guess, mostly of Old Testament stories that are put into movie form, that they change things in such a way that I'm like, why would they change it? Because the original was better. The original story is even more dramatic sometimes than what they do. Because you did say that, like, about True Grit. Well, I could see why they changed it. It might have been easier to understand. It might have been harder to...
But even there were things even with True Grit that I didn't fully understand reasoning behind it. Why would you change this? It actually was an interesting thing that they went ahead and altered. And I didn't know why, because it wouldn't have... I couldn't see how it would maybe have been a budget thing. It definitely didn't add to the drama of it. So I'm always curious about that. Yeah. I don't understand.
And like the way they split up the two guys and who in the book they'd been together the whole time. LaBeef and...
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And the other thing, I heard this on a podcast today, and as we're talking about this, it makes me think of it too, is that we could be very guilty of creating a white Jesus or...
What do you mean we could be? We are massively guilty of that. In fact, I can't think of any major production that is not completely 100% guilty
white
of that.
White Jesus, yeah.
That most recent movie that I was talking about, I was, the moment that I saw the trailers for it, I was like, "You've got to be kidding me!" Right away, we've got a white European with a Spanish accent. It was just absurd to me.
Well, see, it should have at least been a British accent. That makes a lot more sense.
British accent clearly is God's accent.
Well, the guy I heard talking about this was an African American, and he said, "That's your Jesus. It doesn't fit in my culture. The one that I have heard, I grew up hearing preached so many times, and he says." I don't care what color he is, but he said the way you preach him doesn't fit in every group of people. And I thought that was a fascinating concept. And I thought, well, I know Hollywood does that all the time. They always have. And we make him white Jesus. We make him westernized in every way.
That actually brings up a very interesting thought, though, because there is a certain way in which culturally we are going to interpret Jesus. Mm-hmm. Even beyond movies or whatever, just like within a cultural setting or context. And that brings up something that Roger Olson wrote about several years back, talking about, in trying to determine whether or not when you look at the various monotheistic religions out there, is it possible that they're all praying to the same God? Mm. And his point was, well, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go as far as to say that they're praying to the same God, but are we all? When you look at just all the differences in Christianity, is the Catholic believer praying to the same Jesus that the Independent Baptist believer is praying to, or the Pentecostal is praying to. When you think in terms of how it is that we frame our understanding of who Jesus is, I would say there's probably a huge disparity in terms of who they think they're praying to. Now, there's a bucket load of grace when it comes to how God receives those prayers. And anyway, this is so far off topic of what you were talking about. But anyway, it's an interesting concept.
Absolutely.
So, Robbie, do you have a quote for us from...
I do. I have one from C.S. Lewis.
Oh, perfect.
That I saw and that I liked. It's a little long, but I think it's good. It says, most people, if they have really looked into their own hearts, would know that they do want, and want acutely, something that cannot be had in this world. There are all sorts of things in this world that offer to give it to you, but they never quite keep their promise.
Which comes back to things that we talk about on a regular basis, about the way in which we are offered things by this world and the broken systems of consumerism, but under the guise of the promise that we're going to finally find satisfaction. But the Rolling Stones taught us anything.
Can't get no
satisfaction. Well, I was saying we were going to have a new section in this podcast called Please Stop Doing This.
Yeah, we had talked about this a long time ago and forgot about it, and I just saw it the other day in some notes.
So when you think in terms of Christianity as a whole, or specifically, we should narrow it down to Western or American expressions of evangelical Christendom, by and large, because that's what we're familiar with. I don't know exactly what all the nomenclature is applied to nowadays when it comes to that, but when we look at the landscape of the church and we see some of the things that are going on, there's plenty of times that you and I both have thought, please stop doing this. Stop it.
Yes.
Why do you have to do this? Why do we have to be like this?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of them, and this is actually a far more serious, this isn't like a lighthearted kind of thing.
Sure.
But I think it's timely, and I think it's appropriate, and I think even as a church leader, it's important for me to talk about this a little bit. There's a, you're familiar, obviously, with, especially since the Weinstein thing came up, the Me Too movement,
yes.
The hashtag Me Too movement. And it's certainly gained steam, and appropriately so. And so a lot of things have come to light in terms of the dynamics and the politics of power, and how women are oftentimes finding themselves in situations that are where that dynamic is being used to take advantage of them,
yes,
and exploit them even sexually. What's amazing, though, is that that same kind of thing happens in the church, and the church is profoundly silent about it. And one person, and one group, actually, there's actually a group called hashtag, you can look it up, hashtag silence is not spiritual. And it's intended to try to inform women that that power dynamic is not a godly thing. That power dynamic that puts them in a position of weakness or vulnerability unnecessarily like that is not something that God intended for them. And the part of the problem is a faulty understanding of biblical speech concerning submission or concerning a woman's submission. Women are not taught. Very rarely are women taught to be strong and confident and confident or even strong in using their gifts or abilities within the context of the church. There are oftentimes, and I know in the crazy church, that was certainly part of our framework, was that women, you know, were to be quiet, were to be submissive, and that can become a very dangerous dynamic when it comes to the church. And we certainly have seen over the history of the church, plenty of times in which that dynamic has been abused by not even just leaders, but primarily leaders, but others who are in positions of power that have been able to take advantage of those who don't enjoy that position of power. So I think it's important for us to understand that when the Bible talks about, one of the most famous passages out of Ephesians, when it talks about wives, submit yourselves to your husbands, nobody pays attention to the fact that two verses prior to that, Ephesians 5:21, submit to one another. and the fear of the Lord. And the whole idea is a mutual submission in reverence or respect for Christ, not some ungodly sense of being a doormat for somebody else, or in some sense of allowing yourself to become victimized for no real reason, right. Out of a false sense of piety.
Well, I've been surprised because, I don't know, maybe everybody thinks this, but when your experience is something of an extreme like ours was, mm-hmm. I think we walked out of that and said, oh, this was the worst ever, and I'm sure nobody has ever gone through this.
Right.
And I think the more people we've met and gotten to know over the years have had, many different people have had similar experiences of that. And I see it sometimes even more subtly. It may not be as extreme as what we had gone through, but you see that kind of attitude happening a lot.
We do. And it's more prevalent than I would have thought outside of the crazy mm-hmm. church. And again, I do believe that comes back to this a faulty concept of what it is that the Bible is representing. Because you know, we hear things that that women get taught even within this spiritual context that you know to be nice and to be quiet, or that mm-hmm. that carries with it the idea that their sole reason for being is for somebody else's pleasure, mm-hmm. is for somebody else's purpose or yeah. uses. Yeah. And that is not a biblical concept. That's never mm-hmm. what God intended ever in this. Those are way too often silence, submission, to read a quote here, are the church's watchwords for women and girls, and they cultivate and spiritualize passivity, dependency, self-doubt, and deference. Hmm. So what women need to do, and what I encourage all my sisters out there to do, is to begin to learn to be strong in the Lord, to be yes. to develop a well-rounded sense of who you are in Christ, and to recognize the strength and the power and the abilities that you have, not only in the world at large, in your families and your homes, but also within the church.
Yes.
That God has made us all co-heirs and equal together with Christ and for his purposes. So don't ever allow yourself to be backed into a corner by a false and ungodly power dynamic. Be strong. Silence is not spiritual. Be strong. Speak out if you have to. It's all important. That's why we're all here together as the Church of Christ.
And I will say, if anybody's ever wondering, that while we were in that congregation, you never were like that with me, in the sense, I think we took it more as kind of like, you make all the decisions and I just go with whatever, you know, and even there, it didn't actually work that way with you and I. We did discuss everything and work through it. So what would you call, though, what would you consider that interpretation meaning then? The wives submit to your husbands. How would you define that?
Well, again, and you'd have to go back and listen to some of the things that I've taught about on this, primarily, specifically, when I was teaching 1 Peter, when he discusses these things. But I believe wholeheartedly that nobody ever thinks about this. That it's fascinating. We keep talking about this being God's divine plan of you know, God's divine plan for the family order, or mm-hmm. and what they're describing, whenever they describe that, mirrors exactly the first century Roman world.
Oh, that's right.
I guess the one thing that Rome apparently struck upon and got perfectly right was their family dynamic, the patriarchal order of the home. We have the paterfamilia, who's the head of the household, and everybody defers to him, and the women are subject to that, et cetera, et cetera. I believe wholeheartedly what the biblical writers in the New Testament are trying to convey is that we're not out here trying to upset the apple cart. We've got mm-hmm. enough forces and pressures coming in on us from the outside world, accusing us of so many different things, like incest or whatever mm-hmm. they're accusing us of. And it's interesting that incest is another thing that Paul points out and wants to deal with immediately, because we don't want to send the signal that we're here doing things that are overtly trying to upset the normal order of things within the Roman society. We're here representing to you a king who's coming to set all things right. And so that means that, you know, wives, be submissive in the context of this world as it is. But husbands, you should know better. Love your wives. Make sure that dynamic is not some sort of ungodly power dynamic where you control And she has to always be in the sense of deference.
Yeah.
To me, that clearly is what's being conveyed. And Peter, I'm pretty sure it's in 1 Peter, and I'll leave it to you to look it up to find out what he's talking about that. But he goes through all the various classes of people who are normally in positions of being oppressed. So he goes through the slave classes, and he talks about women, and he talks about children. And all of these, he's trying to say, you're more than this, but don't upset the apple cart. Let's just keep moving along here because Christ is coming, mm-hmm. and he's going to make all these things right. So within the home, within our homes, we should be honoring each other just as Christ expects us to. We should be loving each other as Christ loved the church. We should be submitting to one another. But as far as the world is concerned, don't make yourself some sort of societal threat unnecessarily, because our real threat is that the power of the gospel is challenging everything that is not that power. Mm. So
that's good. Well, I felt like I had heard somewhere too along the lines of, maybe that's what I was fishing for, that it had also something to do with respect. That submission had something along those lines, and I feel like ever since I heard that there was something even mentioned one time. I don't remember now where I heard it, because I guess it wasn't from you. Say, for instance, the aspect of a woman mocking her husband or making fun of him in front of other people, that submission had something to do with an honor and a respect for their husband. And
that's true, and that should be true, though, both directions. On this.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
I mean, why in the world would we just highlight that and say, yeah, wives, you should never make fun of your husband. Yeah. Now, husbands, you can make fun of her all day long, because after all, she should be submitting. That's never God's dynamic in that. I don't believe that's ever what he intended in this. There's where we go back to this mutual submission. Mm-hmm. Submit to one another in the fear of the Lord. Out of reverence for Christ, we serve each other. And that concept means to take the lower part and lift the other person up. So if both parties are doing what they can to lift and elevate the other person, and that includes being respectful, being kind, serving one another, then in that, everybody disappears. Christ is left there, because we're both serving Christ by serving each other.
True.
So it's not a matter of trying to gain the dynamic of power over people. And I insist, the whole idea of saying this is the divine order for the family comes back to this worldly concept of somebody has power over somebody else. And the power over people model is not, I believe, a biblical model. It's not what God ever intended.
That came up a couple Sundays ago in your message.
That's come up more than just...
More than once.
That comes up. So obviously you've been sleeping most of the time. And I don't blame you, because I would be too.
I'm not sleeping, but I am working sometimes, so sorry.
If I had to listen to me, oh my
goodness.
I was
just thinking of one in particular that you got a little emotional on. I know how much that bothers you, but everybody else seemed to appreciate it and thought it was a very meaningful point, including
me. Part out.
So, no, it's gone. It's up there.
Anyway.
So, yeah, that's good. That's a really good...
So, what I was going to say is, Christians, please stop doing this.
Please stop it.
Here's the thing. If we were to take what it is that Peter is instructing the church, saying, don't do things that make you look so weird that you look like you're disrupting societal norms unnecessarily, by saying that, you know, to wives, this is how we should do this, or slaves, this is how you should do this. He's not saying slavery is right. He's not trying to say that men should have power over women, but he's just saying that we're going to choose the battles that we fight. So when we look at the landscape, the cultural landscape, I think what Christians need to do is realize, oh, what we should be doing is respecting and treating our wives and the women in our world as equals, because that's what the world is actually all right with, and that is closer to what God's dynamic is supposed to be.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like it.
So, all right, but you can start sending in hate mail if you want to and telling me I'm a heretic.
Dare
ya. You can. I've been around the block a few times now, and I think that this is an important thing that really needs to be addressed within the church. And I think that we are representing things improperly. We're not rightly representing the kingdom of God, and that becomes a stumbling block for the world around us. Mm-hmm. So please stop doing this. Silence is not spiritual. Check it out.
I like it.
Well, Robbie, I kind of think that we've worn out our welcome here, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, the three people that are listening are probably, well, I'm sure one of them at least is asleep by now. Drool probably running down the side of the face, and so... Wake up, it's time to be done with this.
Sorry we didn't have any guests this week. We didn't have...
We don't have any friends. As soon as we make some friends, we'll have them on the podcast.
Our friend moved to Jupiter, Florida. Our one and only friend. No. We have a few more family members that we'll try to have a guest next time. And thank you all for listening. We appreciate you sticking around if you did.
Right on. So for us at the Wonder What Podcast and for Eastgate, we're learning to love God and learning to love others.
This is our story so far.
Thanks for listening. God bless you.
See you next time.
Intro music for the Wonder What Podcast was provided by Matt Green from his album Songs, available for purchase at Bandcamp, iTunes, or stream it online at Spotify. Join the road attend.